This week on Art of the Air, we feature two fiber artists. First, we have Brenda Hutchings, originally from Northwest Indiana, now residing in Georgia. Next, from computer geek to artist, Susan Lux, both sharing their unique artistic journeys and styles. Our spotlight is on the Center for Creative Solutions 2022 Poetry Competition for poets of all ages from the three-county area.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight. Time again for the three-county area poetry competition from the Center for Creative Solutions, and they have a deadline of March 31st. It's for all ages, so from adults down to young people. Last year, they did put together an entire book of their poems and everything, which will later be heard on Michigan City's WIMS and maybe even on our program later in a pre-recorded. We'd like to welcome the Executive Director for the Center for Creative Solutions, Cindy Hedge, and also the Board Chair for that center, along with co-chairing. This is Bill Hollier, along with Dale Cooper. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Larry. It's good to join you again, and we appreciate the opportunity to tell folks more about World Creativity and Innovation Week in Northwest Indiana.
Aloha to both of you.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, whichever one you want to pick it up. First of all, maybe briefly touch on the Center for Creative Solutions. I know we've talked about it before on the show, but tell us about that and then how the poetry competition works.
So the Center for Creative Solutions has been around for a while, and we're located out of primarily Michigan City, but we're actually all over with programming and that we've done and projects that we have done. But so our focus and our goal is to bring attention to encourage a culture of innovation and creativity throughout our region. We know that that has a tremendous impact on the economy, on so many, with every aspect of life for that. So World Creativity Innovation Week was started back in 2001 out of Toronto, Canada. It has spread throughout the world. Here in Northwest Indiana, we have been celebrating it for, I think, around 12, 13 years. So one of the best things that happens during World Creativity Innovation Week is the poetry contest. And Bill, that was your baby. And Esther, I know that that was you were such an instrumental part of that, too. So, Bill, I'm going to throw it back to you and let you talk about that.
All the work that you do promoting creativity in Northwest Indiana, we all really appreciate it. But this is the sixth year of our poetry Zurich showcase. We call it a Zurich poetry showcase. In the beginning, we called it a contest, but Esther and I had trouble with that name because it's difficult to judge poetry when someone's putting their feelings down on paper. It's a very special thing, and we've really appreciated over the years all of the young sharing their thoughts and ideas, their hearts with us, and we've really enjoyed reading some of this poetry over the years. And Esther, of course, is our inspiration. And I wonder, Esther, if you would talk about some of the inspired ideas that you came up with this year for the young folks to write about.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, we did change up. We did change it up. Every year we change up how we approach it. And this year, after going through 2 years of this pandemic, the overall themes we decided would be courage, change, and new perspectives to give us a forthright and positive feeling. But this year for the students, instead of assigning different topics for each grade, we just came up with an inspiration list, because it would be, you know, what inspires a kindergartner. You know, they might be inspired by something that we asked the high schoolers to address. So we just kept it open and came up with a list of 7 or so concepts that they could think about and then choose. And we also, as always, what we kept the same was we are accepting any format of the poems, from like haiku to epic, in any style, any length that they want to do. So we kept some things the same and some things we shook it up a little bit with how we approached it.
So whoever wants to take this, how many submissions do you get? And I realize the last 2 years may be kind of not indicative of the regular, but tell us how many you might get.
Around 50 that we had last year?
We did, and it's only increased every year. The pandemic there was not a decline in submissions.
Last year we had, we hosted, Rick Federici hosted our winning poets on his morning radio broadcast, and several of the schools actually brought all the kids into one room so they could hear their fellow students read the poems on the air. It was very, very touching, very nice.
Tell us about the book that comes out of that. That was the first year you did that last year with the book, and is there plans to do that again, repeat that?
Yes, there is. Actually, Esther designed the cover, which was wonderful, and we printed everybody's poem in the book and shared a book with each of the students that wrote a poem, and then we had books for their school libraries and for the teachers, and to send home with to the parents as well. So I think that was very well received.
And so we're looking for March 31st is the submission deadline. And again, it's for all ages, adults through kids, and we're publishing that. Tell us a little bit about how they can find out more information, where they can submit it, and details like that.
Well, I'll start, and then I'll turn it over to Bill. But so you can go to our website, which is centerforcreativesolutions.com. You can email the center, which is creativity52@comcast, or .net, or you can even give us a call and we can give you more instructions at the center. The telephone number is 219-326-7259. And I know that submissions can also be made directly to Esther and Bill. So would one of you be willing to tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure.
Sure. I'll give you my email address first, and then I'll hand it to Esther, and you can tell them a little bit more about it. But my email is william.hallier, H-A-L-L-I-A-R, @gmail.com. So you're welcome to email me anytime. And Esther?
My email is thenest, Michigan City, all spelled out. Nest is N-E-S-T @gmail.com. And I just want to stress that it's kindergarten through adult.
Okay, and thank you so much for being on Art of the Year Spotlight for the poetry competition. Cindy Hedge, Bill Hallier, and of course my co-host Esther Golden. Thank you so much for being on Art of the Year Spotlight.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air, she's a fiber artist who now resides in Georgia, has an interesting background, restoring a roundhouse here in Washington Township area, and does a whole unique things with fiber art and everything that she'll describe for us. We'd like to welcome Brenda Hutchings to Art in the Air. Welcome, Brenda.
Hi.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you. Well, our audience is always interested in our artist friends and, you know, tell us about their journey, but also everything in their origin story. So I like to always say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So, Brenda, tell us your story.
Oh,
from babyhood.
Right. First I was. No, I was born in Valparaiso, Indiana. My parents both went to VU. They had met there. Grew up in Valpo. Graduated Valpo. Moved away from Valpo. But then realized that my parents were correct and I needed to listen. And then went to school at Columbia College in Chicago, which was just a fantastic experience. I'm so glad that I had that opportunity and I finally listened to my parents and got out of my own way.
So what was the most memorable Columbia experience? What did you gravitate toward then?
I was graphic arts is what I was doing. But I also just went for, they have a variety of so many things to choose from that I just went for the liberal arts degree because I wanted to do marker indication. I wanted to do interior design, trying that. I wanted to, and that is part of my problem, which I don't call a problem anymore because I jump. I go from this process to that process. And that's how my work evolves into what it becomes.
I know. It's kind of like, ask Brenda, she can make anything, really.
I had a friend come up to me and she had this little itty bitty peanut shell. She's like, make this into Jesus in the manger.
I'm
like,
oh my gosh.
No problem.
Well, Brenda, we skipped kind of far ahead all the way to college, but tell us about your experiences growing up and everything like that. Now, you grew up, obviously, in the Valparaiso area and went to school, and maybe your arts experiences and other experiences along the way doing that.
Just that I was in Valpo before Valpo was cool, and and where there was cornfields everywhere. And
was there a lot of, Brenda, was there art in the home? Did your mom or grandmother did you grow up around making things?
Absolutely. We were hands-on. We were in the woods. My mom, Betty Wagner, she went back for her MBA in fine art. She worked mainly in hand-built porcelain, but there towards the end, she was doing more oil paintings and things like that. One of the things that I do have from my mom and dad is that on one of their dates, they had gone to Frankenmuth, Michigan, and they went to paint. And so I have the same picture that they painted, and they're so different, and it's so telling about the different kinds of people that they were. So I have my mom's, and it's a real close-up of this tree, and then my father's is this, you know, stepping back and seeing the whole scene of things. And so, yeah, we were always encouraged to get dirty, play. We had a round table in between our kitchen and our living room. And if it was on the round table, it could stay on the round table. Whatever you were working on, it got to stay there. You didn't have to put it away and clean up. And it was just, yeah, it was wonderful.
Wow, that sounds exquisite, actually.
Yeah, it really was, you know, so.
And what were some of the other interests you had growing up besides art, other things you liked to do and pursue?
Hands-on stuff. I loved the woods. I would go out in the woods. I would play in the trees. I have my favorite picture of me is that I'm up in a tree with these raggedy old bell-bottom jeans and a fur coat, which just sums me up so well. there is no rhyme or reason to what I do.
So how did you then, when did you transition to fiber from graphic?
Well, how did that happen? I had kids and, so did the stay-at-home mom thing for a little bit and then had to go make money again. And that's when I became a school bus driver so that I could have the same schedule. And in that downtime, I was able to work on my artwork. And that was phenomenal. So I had 4 hours free time every day, which I loved. And so what happened, I was at a show and I saw someone using a drop spindle. And I was intrigued. And so I went over and she said, here, yeah, work on this, do this. And I started using the drop spindle. 2 months after that, a friend of mine was transitioning her farm and she had 2 alpaca left. And she's like, you wouldn't want them, would you? I'm like, and so who gives away alpaca? Of course I want alpaca, right? Unfortunately, or fortunately, we lived in the city limits. So I just took half of my backyard and rototilled it up and planted a pasture there. And those 2 alpacas came and lived with us in town until the wind blew down the fence and Beavis and Arthas went for a walk.
Oh, no.
And there you can find that in NWI Times. Just plug it in there and you'll get a photo of their walk. So I had to find a new place for them to go. But that's how I got turned on to it. It was just it fluidly moved from one thing to another. And then I started spinning, doing wet felting. I don't do much needle felting, but I love to like make vessels. So at one point in the work, when you're making vessels, the fiber is felting and fulling. And so it compresses and you can push at it kind of like it's clay. And so it's just a marvelous, versatile, medium. It can just really work in many, many ways. And when somebody said felting, I thought of the piece of felt that you get at
the square, the diamond right. piece of wool.
Yeah, the square. It's like, ooh, felt.
Yeah, and a polyester felt is very different from a wool felt. And yes, you can get square wool felt too, and the stuff that you do is not that either.
No.
Very different.
Yeah. So that's how I began that. I do doll work, so art dolls out of paper clay. I've narrowed my focus medium onto anything fiber. So it's not really just animal fiber, it's any kind of fiber. So it's kind of a loophole in my way to get around and do other things.
And the yarns that you spin are just so beautiful. Your color, your sense of color is just exquisite. And
Thank you so much.
When you have that skein, it's just your imagination goes just wild. They're just so beautiful.
Thank you so much, Esther. Yeah, I love, and it's the whole process from, you know, the field to fashion where I have the animals. I have 2 Pygora goats now. And I do have access to alpaca and other breeds. And so we take it from the animal. We shear the animal, clean the fiber, process it, and dye, and then create. So it's a labor of love, that's for sure. And it's a really quite, like, especially the spinning, is quite a meditative process. And I don't, I am not a purist. So if you're thinking yarn, I'm not the yarn lady who you can get it down from Walmart. You will have bumps and bobbles and this and that's in it. And I think that's just what makes it, you know, just so unique and so much fun.
Now, yeah, Brenda, completely. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and it kind of goes back some time, is you were refurbishing an abandoned house. Tell us all about that. It's a circular house, and it's still in existence, but I don't know what condition it is. But, you know, I was researching you, and that was one thing that popped up. So tell us all about that.
The roundhouse.
Yes. It was originally built by the Wilson family, and I acquired it back when, probably 10 years ago, I think. It was a round circular home with an interior atrium that they ended up putting a geodesic dome on top of. When I saw it, I love it. And when you say house, that's really quite generous. it was raccoon infested, just horrible. But there's still just so much to be done with it. And so I had started to create a creative center there where we were having classes, had a place to have meetings for people, and they had my animals out there also. And life took a shift, and I went with it and had to put the roundhouse on the back burner and aside, and then we moved. But I love the roundhouse, and that was the goal for it, was to have a creative center where it was people could share their work, other people could come in and teach classes and not have to pay an exorbitant fee, and just to share everybody's creative energies.
And so it's just sitting there now. It's no longer viable.
It wasn't viable when I bought it.
It was held together by love.
Held together by love. And yeah, still, but there's still wonderful treasures in it, and you know, we're going back. I'm hoping to open up a shop here. It still niggles at me, and I've got a great dilapidated place here. Fire. And so we'll see if we can't move that whole feeling and journey down here.
And down here, so our audience knows, is Georgia. So, and we might just briefly say, how did you get from Northwest Indiana to Georgia?
My husband went on a bike vacation. He asked people, if you lived in anywhere in Georgia, where would you live? And everybody said up in the mountains. And it happened to be that he looked at a house. He looked at two houses. I looked at it at home. He came home. The next week we had a snowstorm, and so we just packed up everybody and we came down to Georgia to check out the two houses, and the second house was it. We've adopted our granddaughters, and the youngest one was going into middle school, and the facts are I was not going to take her out of shift her in middle school to high school. So we would have either been in Valpo for the next 7 years, or let's go for it. And it just has all fallen into place. I'm working at a firewood mill. I'm in the heart of, heritage artisanship, craftsmanship. Jensie Folk School, Campbell Folk School, is only 50 minutes away from me. And I had no idea that this is where I was landing. It was truly okay, let's go. Neither one of us had ever been to Northeast Georgia, and it has just all been incredible. It's been a great, it's been a great new journey, and it's hooking in with what I was doing even more so. I'm working with the Sautina Kuchi Cultural Center right now. We're going to be hosting a fiber fest in May. And so I jumped in to be vendor coordinator. These are things that I don't do. But I want to jump in. I want to be part of the community. And it's so laid back here. It is just a great transition for me. I have just truly enjoyed the slow pace, and people really do just talk for a long time sometimes.
So it is a different lifestyle from living in Northwest Indiana, and of course, Valpo is still kind of part of the Chicago thing, going down to something more rural like that.
Absolutely.
I know, but the arts communities in the South are just tremendous, especially the folk arts. I mean, it's really appreciated and honored out there. And I can say, for all the phone conversations that we've had, you just sound so happy.
That is true. I am. And while I miss my peeps back at home, we've got a big place and we can camp. Come on down. You know, it's warm here. It's warm. It was 57, I think, today. So
Brenda, did you bring your ceramic stuff, or are you completely like taking a break from ceramics?
When my mom passed, I put away the ceramics. I do have a small kiln that I have. And the thoughts on that is, I've been working on making molds for porcelain hand-built ball-jointed dolls. So that's something that I've been working on underneath everything else. So that isn't fiber, but so what?
No, I'm glad to hear that you haven't, because you've been doing the ball-jointed dolls for in all sorts of iterations for quite a long time. And so to do them out of porcelain would be quite nice, I think.
I have it in my mind. I've been working on it, and they would be cast and poured, but I would have made the molds. And yeah, they would be small. They would be, I don't know, 8 inches at the most. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. But here, everybody is into a lot of pottery, a lot of folk art. And my two neighbors are artists. It's just really cool.
Oh, what type of work is it? So who are you surrounded by?
So I have a thrower and a hand builder with clays. And then my neighbor who just passed away, he was an incredible woodsmith. He was making pieces of different wheels for people that had antique wheels that needed to replace spindles and, you know, mother of alls, and he would just do the work, and it was beautiful. Yeah. So, it's all around here, and it's so laid back. That's what I love about it, is there's no pressure to be something. You're just you. And that's completely acceptable and really quite encouraged. And I like that.
So Brenda, what's on your round table right now, the project that doesn't get moved?
Right. there's not just one, there's several. I've been doing a journal covers, reusable journal covers, so that if you have your composition book, which is the one I use for journaling, now I out of Craftex, which is a paper product that is the material that you use for gene labels, it helps people understand what that is, but I do it in a large form and print and sew and applique onto those to create one-of-a-kind art journal covers, and then they're reusable.
Have they gone out into the world yet?
They have gone out. They went out in the world initially as Christmas presents, and now they're at a new shop here in Helen that's just down from here. Helen's a very large tourist area, just 8 minutes from me here, and so I have my things in that shop, and there's a couple other shops, and they're making their debut there this weekend. So
send some pictures.
So tell us how COVID has impacted you. You know, it's about ready to wrap up here in about a few minutes, but how's that positively, negatively, how's that impact you over that period of time?
You know, I hate to say it, that I really enjoyed it. Because it's so devastating. At the same time, it was what I love to do with all my heart is play and work by myself and not communicate with real people. And so it was lovely. And we did the whole move during COVID. We're in a very small populated area, and we did not have the devastation that they did in the cities. It affected us here, but it was not nearly what was going around in the world, which was also a very nice relief for us here, too. We didn't have that as much of the fear, but still going out in masks and all of that. But the, you know, I really enjoyed COVID.
We've actually heard that from some of our artist friends and other people. They kind of closed down because of it, because they didn't have the social interaction. But a lot of times artists, you know, are free to create, and they like look at it as a blessing in some ways and everything like that. So
the only non-blessing part of it was, you know, making sure that I got into the shower at some point in the week. my family was very grateful when that actually occurred. So, yeah.
Any projects you're looking forward to doing soon? It's kind of like the round table question, but maybe anything you've been wanting to do that you haven't done?
I'm working on graphic felted pictures on a larger scale. So I'm kind of excited about that. It's not anything I've ever done. I took a great course this year on making your own lace, and I would like to incorporate that with this. And so really looking forward to where I'm going to go next.
Well, believe it or not, we're almost done, so we have to wrap up. Tell us a little bit how people can find you, either online, social media, everything down there in Georgia that they want to find you.
All right. My webpage is bwh2.net. You can find me on Facebook at BWH2 Fiber Arts or Brenda Wagner Hines Hutchings. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. And I will have posted on my page when I will be having my next shows and, you know, the goings on, the happenstances in Georgia. So it's really exciting.
Keep blogging. I enjoy what you write.
We appreciate you coming on Art of the Air. That was Brenda Hutchings in Georgia, but from Northwest Indiana, and especially Valparaiso, fiber artists and, well, sort of a restorer of a round house, but we'll see how that works out. Brenda, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. She has a way of living in the world for 6 billion years on Earth, and yes, transcending her role as the smart child over nearly 40 years as a computer geek. But she's embraced fabric ever since she was a kid, seriously creating fabric items, clothing, items like that. And she's even worked in juried shows, and she's had such a joy doing that. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Susan Lux.
Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Well, Susan, we always like our guests to find out a little bit about you. And I always kind of use the term how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about your experience growing up, where you grew up, studying in school, college, and even your work life that's not art related.
Sure. I've had a very windy path to the art world. When I was growing up, I was the smart child, not the creative child. And I always saw myself as more academic than artistic, and I had many sisters who are incredible artists. And so I studied, when I got to college, I studied computer science. And in the 70s, that was kind of a rare thing for women. And I spent a lot of years in the computer industry I worked for Disney. I worked for programming video games. I worked in research and development for computer graphics. And what I learned is that all of these smart computer geeks were also incredibly artistic and creative. I mean, the most creative people I know were in that industry. And so there was a time when I got pretty disillusioned, and I went back to school and I got a degree to teach English, and I got a master's in English, and then from there I went, instead of to teach English, I taught computer science, And along the way, I had kids, and I wanted my kids to see themselves as creative people. I wanted them to see them as, themselves as many things. And so I said to them, well, everybody's an artist. And they put my toes to the fire and said, if everyone's an artist, Mom, what kind of artist are you? And I had to think hard about that. I had to think a long time. And I thought, well, you know, I had created things. I created clothes when I was a kid. It was the 60s and 70s, and we all, you know, wore outrageous things that we created, and everything went. And I thought, that's the artist I am. And so I picked that up again so I could model for my kids that I do believe what I say.
And so back in that childhood, did you have any examples where parents or grandparents creating things or, you know, was art brought into the home in that way that you observed?
My grandmother, was my mother's mother, was unbelievably creative, and she was outrageous. Actually, one summer she made a whole wall in one of her upstairs bedrooms, a collage of magazine pictures, and her grandkids just thought she is the coolest. She used to talk about things that she did with her sisters. So they used to make crazy quilt jackets, she told me, and she was going to make me one. And she instead made me a sleeve because that was my grandma. She wasn't much for finishing. She was really just, you know, out there doing her thing. And then I made her a jacket, and she loved me so much, she wore it. And So I have the crazy quilt jackets that she and I wore, and we traveled around, and we were, I thought we were pretty special back then, but I dearly wish my grandmother could see what I do now, that the adult version of this kid art form.
Susan, I want to revisit your experience at Disney. What exactly, were you part of the Imagineering team, or what exactly did you do for them?
Program animatronics.
I worked for a small, which isn't small anymore, but it was a small department called Scientific Systems, and they did the heavy duty, the sort of one of a kind projects at Disney. So I got to work at on the Imagination Pavilion ride. I got to be one of the programmers on that ride, and when they were first building Epcot. I don't know why they would let a 20-something-year-old do that work, but it was really exciting.
The Price is Right.
There were so many people who were really young doing the work of building Epcot, engineers and programmers. So I got to do some, you know, a lot of one-of-a-kind projects, a pinball game in the Main Street Arcade, where they took out the electromechanical guts and put in electronics to do the work. A people counter that counted people as they came into the park. You know, things with a short shelf life because technology always moves on. But
how exciting!
Yes,
it was very exciting.
So so the kids asked you what kind of artist you are. What type of art do you do? How did they express themselves artistically? Did they have any of them gone into the arts, or have art as a practice just personally?
Yes. You know, they had a lot of access to things to create art. So we had a lot of paints and paper and everything that a kid might want to create with. But when they got a little older, like right before they were teenagers, probably, we created a space in our pole barn where my neighbors had tractors in their pole barns. I insulated mine, and I had a paint space where they could throw paint at the walls. And so they spent a lot of time doing really cool. Their friends would come over. Their friends' parents would drag them out saying, don't you dare think of doing that at home. And but we'd been to a space like that where we paid by the hour to, you know, just express yourself. And then my daughter went into the arts. She got an art degree from Michigan State, and She's a fine artist. She's an important artist. She has a lot to say. I make beautiful work, but she makes important work.
So with your work, did you start out hand dyeing the fabric that you used, or did that come in later in the process of making your work?
Yeah, it came in later. What I found is I couldn't buy the colors that I had in my head. And I met a silk artist at I went to an art show, and I saw this woman, and she saw my cape, and we just went, I love that. I need this in my life. And it's really all about color and getting colors that are bold and being able to make something as a starting place. So when I begin a piece, I begin with the inside and then I work to the outside. And I'll tell you why I do that. This is actually a great story, because when I was working on Epcot, we worked so many hours a week, and I would call home to my mother and I would say, Mom, everything I own is dirty and I'm so grubby. And she sent me a silk camisole and she said, put this on under your clothes. Nobody will know, but you'll know and you'll feel better. And I thought, I am always going to put on something next to me that's for me. And I think that's just the greatest thing. It's like the lining is for you, because nobody's going to see it. But like,
you're going to feel it.
Yeah, you're going to feel it. And I think that's an important part of clothing. You know, if we're going to wear clothing, we often wear it for others, but I want to wear it for myself. And that's who buys my work, is people who have transcended that that part of their life where they go, I must be like everyone else. Now they're like, I'm done with that. I want this for me.
I know. I love that you made that post that people will stare, make it worthwhile. So, it's like so great. So our audience maybe would like to, since they don't have a visual with the radio program, can you describe what your work is?
My work is primarily wraps. They're primarily things, capes and things that you can wrap your body in. So most of my work, all of my work, fits all bodies. And sometimes it's just dyed silk, so you just have one layer of silk. Sometimes it's one layer of silk, and then in the outside layer it's like a large mosaic, a collage of fabric and embroidery.
Like a stained glass window almost.
Yeah. And I want very much to have all those colors. I mean, the beauty of actually having no training in art is that you can make whatever you want. There's no rule to it, because I don't know what the rules are. And so when I start with a pile of fabric, I just look at them and think, these can go together. So I want to mix up colors and textures and have a flow through it. So
you have the beautiful base piece, but then you add embroidery and beading to it and embellish it quite lavishly.
Right.
And Susan, you also do some other things outside of clothing. Tell us about some of those items that, of course, you can see on your website. Tell us about those.
So I a few years ago, I started creating magnetic clasps that go with pieces. So you can fabrics together with two magnets, but they're also made out of my silk and beads and let's see, what else do I do? I don't know what else.
I see you have face masks on there for our period of COVID.
Oh, I did. To the wall pieces.
I had face masks, and yes, and now COVID brought me a new thing of making wall pieces, of making tapestries. And the first tapestry that I made, I tried to make tapestries for a long time, but I couldn't figure out in the abstraction, it wasn't about anything for me. But COVID brought me into this like whole malaise of, I can't move. I just want to sit on the couch and eat mashed potatoes. And so I started going out for walks, and I took a lot of pictures of, you know, everything in my sight. And so I printed some of those pictures on fabric and used it as the center of a wall piece. And then it was about something. And then I started making some that were like five generations of women in my family. And my grandparents, who were magicians, I made a piece about that. And I made a piece about, you know, beautiful flowers or a poem that I loved. And I just started manically creating these wall tapestries. And it's been so much fun. I would never have done that if I hadn't had time to just sit and, you know, wallow.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
So now I have like two things that I'm very interested in. I was going to first, we'll talk about color in a moment, but magicians as in traveling around and doing shows or for the family? I mean, that's so exciting.
They were very big in the Thumb area of Michigan. They were called the Tricky Labrockies. And my grandmother said my grandfather liked to be a big fish in a small pond. So I think their radius was maybe around 50 miles. And they did big stage magic. And
so do you recall their costuming? Was that memorable?
I have only seen a few pictures. And, you know, I think of my grandmother and grandfather. My grandfather was dressed in a black suit. My grandmother had she always had colors, but I think in her magic act it was very subdued. So The pictures that I've seen are black and white pictures, and they were.
And what type of do you know what type of magic was it? Did they do any? I'm trying to like disappearing and I.
They did
like large stage magic versus like like hand magic.
Yeah, they did stage magic. So, you know, my grandmother floated and, you know, levitation tricks. And my grandfather did. When we were kids, we all learned to do the magic act. Everything except levitation. And nobody remembers how to do that. So, or they wouldn't tell us kids that particular trick. But, you know, rabbits out of a hat and silks out of an empty tube, and you know, it was all very dramatic and terrifying.
I love watching it, and I have like no desire. I want that amazement. I don't want to know how it's done. I just always want to be amazed. But back to your work. Now the colors. So do you wake up feeling certain colors, or how do you does your palette change seasonally, or and how did you how do you collect fabrics everywhere you go? How do you amass your palette and your fabrics?
I do collect fabrics wherever I go, and they're getting harder and harder to find. It's just become a very interesting hunt. But and yes, I dream colors, and colors are really important to me in a way that, the colors of my walls affect me very much, or the colors that I wear are important to me because they're about how I feel. But I like bold colors. I like the colors of my grandmother's closet. She bought clothes that were outrageous in color, and then she got soft at the end of her life, but I don't see me going soft into the pastels and all those beautiful, tasteful colors yet. I like jewel tones, and I like things that make us
vibrant.
Very vibrant and bold, yes. Mm-hmm. I see some of the things that you make, too, are unique. Like, yeah, I see a harp case that you've made for someone, and I think a guitar case. And so these are obviously probably commissions and something you probably don't like. But what other type of commission work do you do?
I do a lot of I've done a lot of commissions in the past that were the harp case, the guitar case. They're for a woman who gave music lessons to my kids. I did a lot of bartering when they were growing up, and it never would have occurred to me to make that, but she asked for that specifically. So now the commissions that I make primarily are somebody would like a cape in particular colors, or they would like something for their wall that incorporates their pictures, which is really exciting work. So somebody brings me photographs that are meaningful to them, and I make a wall tapestry for them. So I made a wall tapestry of somebody's dogs. They were Yorkies, and they were named after characters in Spenser's Fairy Queen. So I got to use my English degree and my artistic sense and, you know, somebody else's memory and story and bring it into a piece. I love doing that kind of work, or something where somebody tells me a story. I've made memory pieces for, a friend of mine had a child who died when he was very young, and they had a box of his clothes, and they wanted me to transform those clothes into a piece of art, and they didn't care what it was. And what an honor, actually, to be trusted with something that was so deeply personal and meaningful. So it took all of their stories and all of their memories and all of their discussion about this child. And I made a huge quilt that they hang on the wall. But the kid had pockets in his clothes and everything. So, you know, the pockets were filled with kid things, and he was a contemporary of my children. So it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I cried as I made it.
Oh, I bet. Like,
we all cried when I delivered it. It's just
so beautiful.
Really something. Yeah.
I know we do. I think most of us save particular pieces. I mean, just in general of our children's clothing, you know, that hold dear memories, and what a beautiful next life for it to go into a piece of art.
We touched on it very briefly, and maybe you could share with us about, you know, you made masks during the pandemic, but how did COVID impact you personally? I mean, as far as were you more creative or less creative, or how did that work out?
At first I was despondent. It's like all the art shows were canceling, and I was like, oh, this just can't continue. And the work in my studio was piling up because I create in the winter and go to art shows in the summer. And then I started going out for walks, like I said, and I started making wall tapestries, and then it became like a gift instead of a burden of time or just disappointment of not getting to do what I had imagined I was going to do in these years of COVID. I've done more things, and it just expanded me, which I think is remarkable. I would not have predicted any of that path, which is pretty much my life. I would not have predicted the path.
Anything you're looking forward to doing now that we're hopefully emerging from the pandemic that you haven't been able to do?
Yeah, I'm waiting for all those juries to come in for art shows. 5 are in, 9 are out, you know, and I'm waiting to hear what I get to do in the summer this year. And I'm really excited to see if I could get, if some of my wall work will be juried into art shows, and see how that's received in the wider world, because creating in a vacuum is maybe not the most satisfying thing to do.
In the art show world, were you, I don't know if everybody knows, but you prepay for these spaces. And so when shows are canceled, did they transfer that to the next time they're going to do a show, or was that a loss for you?
Some shows transferred it to the next year. Some shows returned it. Some shows kept it. I didn't actually have any shows that kept the funds, but I think the loss for artists is that's, if like my business model is really to go to shows to sell my work, and so the loss was really that there was no work.
Yes, and it's so wonderful to meet all the wonderful people who come to these art fairs.
Oh my gosh, I love the conversation with women who come to my. Even men sometimes will come into my booth, and I love that too, because this work is for everybody. I love it when men buy my work. I love it when women buy my work, but the conversation is everything. It is everything.
Yeah. Color and texture is very evocative. So, you know, and we choose things that spark a memory in us usually, you know, that reminds us of something. So,
oh yeah. And women will tell you a story in a minute. You know, they'll tell you a life story in a minute. And you think, what a gift, what a gift.
Well, Susan, we need to almost get wrapped up here, but I want to leave you a chance to let people how they can find you on the web or social media or anything like that. So tell us about how they can find you.
Sure. I'm at SusanLux, SusanLux.com. And I have a website because I was a web programmer for a long time. I can be found on Facebook if you look up Susan Lux. And I'm Susan Lux as an artist, and I'm Susan Lux as a person.
Well, very good. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing your artistic journey and everything. Susan Lux there. She's transformed from being a worker at Disney programming things to this wonderful world of fabric. And you can see her stuff at her website at SusanLux.com. She's also on LinkedIn, Facebook, and you can find out all about her. I'm sure if you do a Google search, she'll come up. Susan, thank you so much for coming on Art on the
thank
Air.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
It was really nice of you to have me.
You've been listening to Art on the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your